From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything that's in the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for June the 18th, 2017. A happy Father's Day to all of the fathers out there, and welcome to our weekly look at the politics and policies that shape your lives from Chicago to Springfield to Washington, D.C. Time to grab the Sunday paper, get that cup of coffee, and we'll try to get your Father's Day and your week off to a great start. And a special welcome this morning to Domati Pongo, who's in for Dave in the newsroom today, because Dave's out on a road trip cruising Michigan with his father and sent a picture from Mackinac Island. So looks like Dave's well on his way up to Michigan. And also a happy birthday to Domati.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And a happy Father's Day to you, Rick.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Domati and I share something very special in common. We both attended Southern Illinois University at Edwardsville.
That we did.
And I'm just trying to still figure out how the heck you ended up in Edwardsville coming out of Chicago. Because this will tell you the story. When I got there, and I don't want to say what decade, but when I was there and someone asked me, "Are you from Chicago?" And I said, "Well, actually, I was from the suburbs." And they said, "Well, are you closer than Plano?" I said, "Plano?" And they said, "Yeah, that's the only kid we have down here that says he says he's from Chicago." And I said, "Well, Plano ain't Chicago."
Not even close.
So how'd you end up in Edwardsville?
No, same thing. I'm still trying to figure that one out. But nowadays, they do a lot of recruiting in Chicago. They do a lot of recruiting in Chicago. So if you went down there now, it's like you'd meet people from the suburbs, Chicago, the Chicagoland area. I ended up there because my sister went to school for dentistry in the area.
Sure,
so
yes.
So I wanted to go somewhere familiar.
The Alton Dental School.
Yes, very good program there in Alton. So and I got a scholarship, so that helped.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Yeah, I got an academic scholarship. So that definitely narrowed it, that college choice down really, really quickly there.
Yeah, because the school was a lot different when you were there than from when I was there. Because I'll be honest with you. Now, it's a beautiful campus, 1,600 acres on the bluffs of the Mississippi River. We'll actually ask Sam if he can remember what the name of the mascot is down there.
Oof. The SIU Edwardsville, I have no idea.
Keep going.
The Pontificators.
That's really...
You know, he's not half bad on that.
I was just going to say, you know, judging by me and Rick, I think so. I think it's good. It's the Cougars, believe it or not, Sam.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, SIU Edwardsville Cougars. Yes.
The Edwardsville Cougars.
What's the mascot's name?
You know.
Oh, how do you not know this one, huh? Come
well,
on.
Because they've changed mascot. I mean, they had different cougars over the years.
See, Rick's got a good excuse. I have no excuse as to why I don't know
Looks
the name
like
of
it's
the mascot.
Eddie the Cougar.
It's Eddie?
Eddie Edwardsville. That makes sense. It's catchy.
Oh, man.
It's catchy.
Oh, okay. So, like, now.
See, back when you were there, it was more of a commuter school, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, really. And there weren't. There weren't a whole lot of buildings. There wasn't much to say for on-campus housing.
And I've heard that you had to chisel your notes with a stone slab.
Jeez. Wow. See, now I'm being double teamed. I would normally expect that kind of comment from Sam. But
and he
now,
used to walk 4 miles to class in the snow.
You did? Well, no, there wasn't snow, but you did have to walk 4 miles from the parking lot because the parking lots were huge, and it was a 4 mile walk to campus every day.
That is still true. That is still true.
But no, I mean, and that town has changed so much too. I mean, it was still kind of quasi rural, quasi St. Louis bedroom community, and now it's really become more of a much more grown up place, much less rural than it used to be.
That's a straight shot down 55 too, right? All the way through? To Edwardsville?
Just
from Chicago? Yeah, pretty much,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, pretty much. It's about 8 miles off 55.
But you could take it through Bloomington, through Springfield, and pretty much get right there.
Yeah, right. But okay. Now, Domati, do you remember what the name of the newspaper was down there?
Ooh, the Alestel.
Yeah, and do you know what the Alestel stands for?
Now, there's Alton, East St. Louis, there's one more. Edwardsville. Duh. Yeah.
For the three campuses.
For the three campuses. I was, I didn't know I'd be in journalism, but I was in the Alestel at one point in time. I run for student government, and it was a big deal. I actually went for class president, and then I took an internship and left, but that's how I got familiar with the Alestel. I was there, you know, as a subject of people's writings for a while.
And it's always a renegade publication.
Yes.
We were always the counterculturists down there. Counter-administration culture.
Now, you had a position there with the Alestel, right?
I worked there, yes. I started out doing some sports stuff, but I wasn't like an editor or anything of that nature. I mean, but it was a great camaraderie down there on the newspaper. It was a lot of fun, but especially when we'd be pressing deadline, and it was printed down at the Collinsville Herald, and so at 12:30 at night, trying to race down to Collinsville on 157, Illinois, wow. 157, to drop off the prints for the paper, and then racing down 6 hours later to go pick them up and bring them back to campus.
Well, I think I've said this to you when we had a chance to interact in the past. I want to say it to you on air. I don't get a chance to meet many Edwardsvillians. How do you say it?
Edwardsvillians.
Edwardsvillians. And, yes. And you know, it is an inspiration.
Or just e-villains, you could say.
E-villains. That sounds much cooler. but you know, it's just a true success story from the Alestel to the Tribune, to watch your career over the years, and to call you a fellow alumni of my school. It means a lot. So it's great to share the airways with you.
Well, it's so good to have you on, and so good to have you here at WGN, and another proud graduate of SUI.
Yes,
as it were. And I had to note that on your bio, you do it in the classic with the small e, not the capital E.
You've got to. Everyone thinks it's a typo. I say, don't correct it. You've got to have the small e.
That was always the classic logo.
I'm telling
you. Differentiated itself from SIU Carbondale, which is the SIU everybody thinks of and knows of automatically. And speaking of SIU Carbondale, one of our guests today is David Yepsen. He's the former director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at SIU Carbondale. So maybe kind of an SIU day. We've got State Representative Jay Hoffman from Swansea in the Metro East area, and he's always keeping an eye on SIU Edwardsville matters. We might even bring up a little topic of higher education with him. He'll be coming up after the 7:30 news. We'll have David Yepsen on after 8 o'clock. And then after 8:30 news, we'll have Senate President John Cullerton. We'll be talking about the latest as Governor Bruce Rauner has called lawmakers back in for a special session starting on Wednesday to deal with our long-running impasse. So that's all coming up ahead. Remember, you can always find our podcasts, if you have to tune away at any time, on WGNradio.com or at searching iTunes. And you can text us at 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. And we're on Twitter @SundaySpin. And producer Jasmine's here to field your phone calls, 312-981-7200. And engineer Bob is here to push all the buttons, and he's checking out the brunch menus for today. So that's our show for coming up ahead, and we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue on what's opening to be a beautiful Sunday. Happy Father's Day. It's time for our weekly spin through national politics, and a bitterly divided U.S. Capitol comes together, at least for a moment, after shots rang out on a ball field in Virginia where Republicans had gathered to practice for their annual congressional baseball game. When the shots began, Illinois Republican Congressman Rodney Davis of downstate Taylorville was at home plate preparing to take batting practice. Here's what Davis told CNN about the event that severely injured Congressman Steve Scalise, two Capitol Police, a lobbyist, and a congressional staffer.
Well, this is an event where we raised over $600,000 for local D.C. charities, and Republicans and Democrats in a bipartisan way come together to play a game. And we have kids in our dugouts. We have staffers and former staffers that practice with us. I mean, these aren't just members of Congress. And you would think when you turn on the 24-hour news cycle that no Republican like me ever talks to a Democrat. That's just not true. I catch in the game. And you can ask every single Democrat. I jaw with them. We have fun. It is a great opportunity, and I never thought I'd play a baseball game for charity, go to practice at 6:30 in the morning, and have to dodge bullets.
Now, the shooter, James T. Hodgkinson of downstate Belleville, was killed. He was a vocal opponent of Donald Trump. He apparently had a list of three Republican congressmen's names on him at the time of the shooting. And he also had supported Bernie Sanders' bid for the presidency. On the Senate floor, here was Sanders' reaction to the shooting.
Madam President, I have just been informed that the alleged shooter at the Republican baseball practice this morning is someone who apparently volunteered on my presidential campaign. I am sickened by this despicable act, and let me be as clear as I can be. Violence of any kind is unacceptable in our society, and I condemn this action in the strongest possible terms. Real change can only come about through nonviolent action, and anything else runs counter to our most deeply held American values.
Now, regardless of party or political philosophy, the shooting did bring together all members of Congress in the House and Senate. Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan gaveled in a somber Congress that day.
We are united. We are united in our shock. We are united in our anguish. An attack on one of us is an attack on all of us.
Now, President Trump also addressed the nation and basically was credited for sticking to the script in voicing his feelings.
We may have our differences, but we do well in times like these to remember that everyone who serves in our nation's capital is here because, above all, they love our country. We can all agree that we are blessed to be Americans, that our children deserve to grow up in a nation of safety and peace, and that we are strongest when we are unified and when we work together for the common good.
But in the aftermath of this, political finger-pointing resurfaced. Some on the right referred to radical leftists. Some on the left criticized the right for supporting the availability of guns. But in an interesting twist, Republican Congressman Mark Sanford of South Carolina went on MSNBC's Morning Joe program and said that he felt that the warring of parties, the harsh rhetoric, the lack of civility, all was in part due to Donald Trump.
I would argue that the president has unleashed is partially, again, not in any way totally, but partially to blame for demons that have been unleashed, whether it's what I saw at a senior center back home and people saying F you and F you and F you to each other at a senior center, a retirement center, where they're going to see each other playing croquet the next day, or with what happened, again, not with what happened yesterday, but the fact that, you know, you've got the top guy saying, well, I wish I could hit you in the face, and if not, why don't you, and I'll pay your legal fees. That's bizarre. We ought to call it as such. And what I've said, you know, back home, when some of these people have been, frankly, weird and different in a town hall meeting, I said, what is going on? And they'll say, look, if the guy at the top could say anything to anybody at any time, why can't I?
Why can't I? That's our new civil society that we live in. The shooting, a concern over Scalise, who's still recovering and in serious condition from surgery, multiple surgeries. concern over Scalise, who's the majority whip, the subsequent ball game at the Nationals ballpark in D.C., overshadowed for a bit the continued talk in Washington about Donald Trump, Special Counsel Robert Mueller, and Attorney General Jeff Sessions. You had a Trump, I guess, close friend go on the air and say that the president was considering firing Robert Mueller as special counsel, which he can't directly do. He'd have to go to the deputy attorney general. But, I mean, there's already talk of what that might predict for the future when it comes to this Trump presidency. But last week, you have the Washington Post reporting that Trump was indeed being looked at by Mueller's office for obstruction of justice, based off the testimony by James Comey. And indeed, on Friday, Trump seemed to confirm that when he tweeted, quote, "I'm being investigated for firing the FBI director by the man who told me to fire the FBI director. Witch hunt." And, of course, the president always provides us with a tweet on Sunday morning. Quote, "The Make America Great Again agenda is doing very well despite the distraction of the witch hunt." So there you have the president kicking off his Twitter feed today. In the meantime, you had Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, who went to testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee. And Democrats clearly weren't satisfied with his answers or non-answers, particularly when he was asked about his refusal to give answers as a way to protect the president's ability to use executive privilege. Here's Senator Kamala Harris, a former state attorney general from California, questioning Sessions.
Did you have any communication with any Russian businessmen or any Russian nationals?
I don't believe I had any conversation with Russian businessmen or Russian nationals.
Are you aware of any communications?
A lot of people were at the convention. It's conceivable that somebody came up to me.
Sir, I have just a few.
Will you let me qualify? If I don't qualify it, you'll accuse me of lying. So I need to be correct as best I can.
I do want you to be honest.
And I'm not able to be rushed this fast. It makes me nervous.
That's the Attorney General of the United States of America, Jeff Sessions. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead on The Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to Jay Hoffman. He's a Democratic state representative from Swansea in the Metro East area. And Jay is the author of several pieces of legislation regarding changes in workers' compensation. Last week, we had two representatives of the insurance industry on who were talking about what they believed they thought should be part of any workers' compensation legislation. And I wanted to have Jay on to kind of offer his view of what he thinks ought to be in workers' comp legislation.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. Had a chance to watch a bit of that U.S. Open golf tournament up in Wisconsin yesterday. And I have to tell you, Justin Thomas shooting a 63 in the U.S. Open, I mean, that is, it's totally unheard of. And I have to tell you, my friend Jeff, who's my buddy DeBear's blog that lives in New York City, he tweeted, Sam, I thought you'd like this. He tweeted this morning that I turned on the U.S. Open and ended up watching the John Deere Classic.
Yeah. Why did he say that? I don't get it.
Well, the low scoring. I mean, it's the U.S. Open. It's normally, you know, they trick things up and the rough is the rough and everything. And you have so many people under par. You got 12 under is leading after three rounds. That may be actually a record for par 72 course for
and
three rounds.
Three guys at 11 under. Ricky Fowler's 10 under. It's tight at the top.
Yeah, I mean, it should be very interesting, and I'll be very curious to see what they do to the course today for the final round. But also, you have to wonder if that may be the only U.S. Open that golf course gets, because you know, it's part of it is the USGA, and they pride themselves on making things tough.
And you just put Vaseline on the green today. A little paintbrush.
What was the line that the guy got in trouble for at the Masters? The CBS announcer, golf announcer, I think he described using bikini wax on the greens at the Masters.
Yeah, you can't say that.
No. He was not part of the Masters announcing team after that.
He was banned. Yeah, that's Gary McCord.
Gary McCord, right. Which, what can you say? What can you say?
He used the terms bikini wax and body bags in the same day.
Terms you're not normally associated with a golf tournament with.
And the golf course doesn't appreciate that either.
No, they're very protective about that down at Augusta National. That's for darn sure. Well, joining me now on the phone is State Representative Jay Hoffman, a Democrat from Swansea from the Metro East area. Jay's been involved very much in issues involving workers' compensation changes. Those are one of the preconditions that Republican Governor Bruce Rauner has established in order to try to get through and out of this budget impasse. Representative Hoffman, thank you so much for joining me on the Sunday Spin.
Good morning and happy Father's Day. I was just thinking when you were talking about the U.S. Open, shot a 63 and putt-putt golf.
With or without a putter.
There you go.
Well, Jay, thanks so much for joining me this morning. And in fact, we were even talking about SIU Edwardsville because Domite Pango, who is doing the news today for us, he's an SIU e-grad. And and I've got David Yepsen here, who was formerly the public policy director at SIU,
sure.
Carbondale's Paul Simon Institute. And, I mean, before we talk about workers' comp, I've been talking about this for a while, this whole concern about higher education and how things are going. And, you know, you've got SIU Carbondale, they're borrowing money from SIU Edwardsville to stay afloat. They're borrowing money from the SIU Medical School in Springfield. I know that's created some tensions in the SIU system. I know you still keep an eye on that. I'm just wondering what's the fate of these universities that are part of the SIU system?
For years, I represented SIU Edwardsville, and we are in a crisis. And it's not only the SIU system, it's the entire university system and community college system, all of higher ed in Illinois. You know, Rick, this is the 717th day of Governor Rauner's budget impasse since he's taken office. And you and I have known each other for several years. This is the fifth governor that I've served with, and it's the only one that we've not been able to come to a budget agreement. Part of the reason isn't so much the difficulties with the budget, but the crisis that has been created because of these preconditions to even discussing a budget. One of those is the issue you mentioned earlier of workers' compensation. We believe, as Democrats, and I certainly believe, that there needs to be workers' compensation reform. In fact, we worked hard in 2011 to provide that reform. The difference between us and Governor Rauner is that we don't want to see the reform on the backs of people who are injured at work and have a legitimate injury to be compensated for. 2011, we passed historic reforms that provided for decrease in benefits and decreased the amount of money that is paid to providers of health care to injured workers. That's doctors, hospitals, chiropractors, physical therapists, by 30%. And as a matter of fact, Rick, the National Council on Compensation Insurance, which is short is NCCI, which is incidentally a insurance company trade organization, they provide to each state a rate review. And they had indicated the costs in Illinois since the 2011 reforms have dropped by precisely 30.1%. Yet we're not seeing the employers in Illinois receive reductions in premiums. Cost of the system have dropped. Profits have risen to the insurance companies, yet Illinois employers have not been able to see lower premiums. And that's the direct cost that they have to pay with regard to the workers' compensation system. Now, why is that? I would say that Illinois does not have in place the right type of insurance regulation that would ensure that these reductions in costs actually are passed on to employers. And the impetus for workers' compensation reform is to make us more competitive. We are one. There are 39 states in the nation, including Iowa, Wisconsin, Indiana, and Missouri, that either have prior rate reviews to make sure that rates aren't excessive to the employers. I'm just talking about the premium rates. And there are 22 states that actually have a not-for-profit that competes in the insurance pool. Now, I understand that last week you had several individuals, a couple individuals from the insurance industry. They're attempting to protect their profits, and I get that. And I'm not saying that insurance companies shouldn't make profits, but since the 2011 reform, in 2011, 0.3% of premiums were profits, insurance company profits. Now 17.2% since 2011, and that's not being passed on to the employers. That's creating the crisis. That's creating the non-competitiveness. So I'm saying if you want us to look at further reduction of benefits, we need to make sure that those cost savings are actually passed on to the employers.
Well, one of the things that these insurance industry representatives said yesterday is that you're looking at Illinois, where it's a marketplace of over 300 different insurance providers of workers' compensation insurance, and that's the competition, and that effectively works to keep prices competitive.
Well, you would think that, but the truth is that their actual amounts of their premiums are actually filed with the Department of Insurance, so they basically know what each other's rates are going to be. And I would just say this, if they weren't making significant profits in Illinois, they wouldn't be doing business here. So since 2011 and the reforms that we've made, they're making more and they're making historic profits. Let me just give you this example. In 2011, for every dollar that was spent in premiums, 75% of that went out in paying for claims, 75% of it. Now, for every dollar that is spent in premiums, 53% is being paid out in claims and other costs. So the delta of 22% is being kept by the insurance companies and is being entertained in forms of profit. We're just saying this. Let's follow 39 other states that have prior rate approval to make sure our rates aren't excessive so the employers can be competitive. All the states surrounding us either have that or they have a not-for-profit organization that competes in the marketplace. Actually, there are some states, including Ohio, that you can only get workers' compensation insurance from the not-for-profit that is in their state. That's our position. We agree that there needs to be reforms. There shouldn't be fraud in the system. But we want to make sure that the employers can be competitive and there's prior rate approval.
So who would be in charge of regulating or overseeing?
In other states, it's the Department of Insurance. In our bill, which we have passed through the House and the Senate, and is sitting on the governor's desk, that's what would happen. It would also do several other things. It would cut down on fraud in the system. It would provide safety and return to work programs. It would also, for the first time, codify this whole issue of whether an injury is actually caused by an employer. And it would include several of the provisions that the Rauner administration has indicated that they need in order to have their precondition of discussing the budget met. I personally believe there should be no preconditions to passing a budget. We should be working on a budget so that the university systems aren't devastated, so that our social service programs aren't devastated, so that we're not using the crisis of a budget in order to jam through some of these, what we believe are anti-middle class, anti-working family provisions that the Rauner administration is requiring that we pass prior to a budget. But having said all that, I understand that he has made this and other things preconditions to even discussing the budget. So we've asked to meet with him to begin negotiations once again, and we have sent him several pieces of legislation, including comprehensive workers' compensation reform that would save costs and would reduce employers' premiums.
We're speaking with State Representative Jay Hoffman, a Democrat from Swansea in the Metro East area. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm Rick Pearson, and this is your Sunday Spin on this Father's Day Sunday. And I'm speaking with Democratic State Representative Jay Hoffman from Swansea. We're talking about proposed changes in workers' compensation, one of the preconditions that Governor Rauner has established. And Representative, I know there was another piece of legislation that would create a state-run workers' comp insurance company, basically seeded with $10 million.
Right. So actually, it wouldn't be a state-run insurance company. It'd be a not-for-profit that would have $10 million seeded from the states, and there would be a board that would actually run the company that would be appointed by the governor. The money then, as profits are made by, or as money is brought in, the money will be paid back to the state, the $10 million. This is done in, I believe, 22 other states, and is not uncommon because it provides some, it makes sure that there is competition within the marketplace so that there's no collusion by the insurance companies in setting rates and setting premiums. Missouri, right across the river from where I live, as you know, Rick, you've been there, incidentally. I think 2 weeks ago was the International Horse Radish Festival in Colorado, Illinois, which you've attended in the past.
I was afraid you were going to mention the Horse Radish Festival.
I'm in St. Louis, and you missed it this year. But Missouri, right across the river, is one of the states that has a not-for-profit that has been wildly successful in driving down rates. I'm just saying, if we're going to point to states that surround us, whether it's Missouri, Iowa, Wisconsin, Indiana, or Kentucky, look at what they do. They have all of them either have prior rate approval to make sure that rates are excessive by their Department of Insurance, or have a not-for-profit that competes in the marketplace. We don't have either one of those.
Let's go to the broader picture here. We're going to have this special session convening on Wednesday that the governor has called. At the same time, yesterday started a new advertising campaign by the governor, the first actually of paid for by his own political fund, his reelection fund, attacking House Speaker Michael Madigan, his favorite target, and then talking about how he's proposing, you know, a balanced budget and property tax reform and all of that kind of thing. And I know some questions have been raised about the fact of running these ads at the same time that there's talk of among Republicans of wanting to compromise. Is that how you really compromise with somebody?
Right. Well, it's unprecedented. The amount of money that is being spent, we're what, 16 or 17 months before an actual election. And they're already spending millions and millions of dollars on TV ads. Unfortunately, when you call the legislature back to special session, which incidentally I agree with, we should be in Springfield. We should be trying to come up with a bipartisan solution to this crisis of the budget. We should be talking about the budget. But then at the same, nearly the same day that you call a special session and ask for compromise from the other party, you begin to run negative TV ads to the tune of millions of dollars statewide, pointing fingers and blaming the other side for the crisis. I think it's time that the political game stop, the blame game stop, and I don't think that putting those TV ads have helped much in trying to reach a compromise. You know, there are certain fundamental beliefs that Democrats have and certain fundamental beliefs that the Republican Party has. Our party has always been founded on attempting to help working families and protecting the middle class. We believe that some of the preconditions to talking about a budget have actually been a bludgeon on the middle class, and we're not going to agree to them wholeheartedly. Yet, this spring session, we've passed significant legislation to the governor's desk that has included cuts in property taxes. We've passed to his desk a reform in the workers' compensation system, where we're trying to level the playing field for small and medium-sized businesses. We've reformed the state's procurement code and have passed a bill that would allow for the sale of the Thompson Center, all preconditions to him even discussing a budget. Yet they aren't exactly what he wants. They're not 100%, and I understand that. But when you work in a democratic process, you need to compromise and you need to come to solutions based on compromise. You can't just take your ball and go home and spend millions of dollars on TV ads and say that it's always someone else's fault. You have to govern. It's time to govern. And it's all time for us to make very difficult decisions. It's not easy. It's not going to be easy to balance the budget, much less meet all his preconditions 100%. It's not going to happen. But if you talk about the budget, it's fairly simple. There has to be spending cuts, and they're going to have to be significant, and there has to be some revenue increases in order to balance this budget. And we should do it now. And I'm willing to take the tough votes to do that. Do you want to do it? We'd rather not. But at some point, you have to govern, and you have to do what's difficult. You know, it seems like everybody is scared of losing an election and don't want to do what is necessary and make the tough decisions. Well, I'm proof of point. I've lost elections before, and in this country and in this state, unlike other countries, they don't shoot you or hang you. There's life after the electoral process, and you can maybe run again and be successful. But we have to put all this nonsense aside, and we have to do what's right and find a solution in a bipartisan fashion. And everyone knows the numbers don't add up. We can't, as Democrats, pass a bill to the governor and override his veto. We need Republican help. So there has to be a bipartisan solution in order to get this done. And Republicans that represent university towns, they're seeing their universities almost, you know, close, in the case of Eastern Illinois University, and I believe Western Illinois University and Northern Illinois University and SIU Carbondale, they're hemorrhaging. And they need to come forward and help us find a solution and convince the governor you're not going to get 100% of these preconditions because we don't believe they're good for middle-class families.
Well, given where things stand, and I'm not sure, the Republicans in the House and Senate filed bills last week that they called a compromise, even though they hadn't necessarily talked to Democrats about it. But
they like compromising with themselves.
Well, I'm sure there's part of that going on as well. I mean, joking and not so much, but nevertheless, I'm not sure that, you know, we don't end up back at trying to do some kind of emergency stopgap measure, which Democratic Senate President John Cullerton says his members, they're not going to consider without some kind of a revenue increase.
Sure. So my position, this is just my position, is that first and foremost, we should take these next 10 days and work on the budget. If the governor wants to discuss other non-budgetary items and continues to demand that they be a precondition for us finding a long-term solution, we should begin to talk about it on day one when we return to Springfield, if not today. But we've made the offer of sitting down with the governor to do that, and he has not responded and is basically, I assume, by being non-responsive, is declining the offer. So let's just assume that sanity prevails and someone says that we're not going to require these preconditions to discuss the budget and actual budget discussions begin between Republicans and Democrats. I think that there is a path to a bipartisan solution, that there is enough pressure on the system and there is a crisis that has brewed that we can find a long-term solution. If we don't, I would never be for us continuing without a budget and having the possibility of schools not opening, of universities closing, of seniors not receiving their services, the disabled not receiving theirs, child care system is hemorrhaging, and I would be for then a stopgap budget, but not prior to us making a real effort of finding a long-term solution.
That's Democratic State Representative Jay Hoffman from Swansea, who will be returning to Springfield along with the rest of the legislature for the special legislative session on the budget and other issues that begins on Wednesday. Jay, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks, Rick. Good talking to you again. And once again, happy Father's Day.
And a happy Father's Day to you. We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking with David Yepsen. He's the host of Iowa Press and the former director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to our second hour of the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio and Tribune Tower on a sunny North Michigan Avenue this morning. And joining me here in studio is my good friend David Yepsen, host of the venerable Iowa Press on Iowa Public Television and former director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale, and before that, the acclaimed national columnist and reporter, a political reporter for the Des Moines Register. That business card's getting pretty big these days.
Good to be with you, Rick. Well, happy Father's Day.
And a happy Father's Day to you. Thank you so much for coming in studio, coming to Chicago. It was great having a chance Friday night to show you the Riverwalk a little bit.
Great city. And, great city, Rick.
Well, and now you, as
and you're
you said,
you're the best host for it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I wanted to talk to you first about national politics and Donald Trump, the issues of the special investigation. But before I do that, I wanted to play this cut of Oregon Senator Democrat Ron Wyden addressing Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, in the Senate Intelligence Committee, where he accused Sessions of not answering, using the term stonewalling, which, of course, a very popular Watergate-era term. And Sessions had a very terse response.
I am not stonewalling. I am following the historic policies of the Department of Justice. You don't walk into any hearing or committee meeting and reveal confidential communications with the President of the United States, who's entitled to receive confidential communications in your best judgment about a host of issues, and have to be accused of stonewalling for not answering them. So I would push back on that. Secondly, Mr. Comey, perhaps he didn't know, but I basically recused myself the first day I got into the office, because I never accessed files. I never learned the names of investigators. I never met with them. I never asked for any documentation. The documentation, what little I received, was mostly already in the media and was presented by the senior ethics public responsibility, professional responsibility attorney in the department.
So that's Attorney General Jeff Sessions. And one of the things I think is interesting in there, he said, you know, that former FBI Director James Comey may not know that I basically recused myself the moment I got into office. I would bet that might also be news to President Trump, who has expressed apparently his displeasure over Jeff Sessions, his attorney general, recusing himself.
Well, I thought Sessions had a pretty good performance. Was on a couple occasions was very forceful, but this whole thing is the sad part about it to me is it is a huge distraction from the real problems facing the country. Republicans are frustrated because it's sidetracking their agenda, but you know, as an American, you look at all the issues facing the country, and we are eating up all kinds of time and political bandwidth dealing with this whole issue, and obstruction of justice now hangs over the presidency. That's a really electric term in our society, thanks to Watergate, and so now we're going to spend months with this crowding out other issues, and that is really a sad thing to have happen to the country.
Well, and at the same time, people point out that if it wasn't for Trump's own statements and tweets, who's to say it would, you know, have gotten this far?
Yeah, his own friends are saying, knock off the tweets, put it away. You know, I thought once his wife moved into the White House, you know, having your wife around, she can say to you, honey, knock it off. And, you know, that might have helped, but it doesn't seem to have made any difference.
No, and again, he's out tweeting today and talking about, you know, the witch hunt overshadowing his accomplishments.
And he not only does he step on his own message, he makes his situation worse. And the things he says both in those communications, but also that he has said on the campaign, undercuts his legal case that he has. So
yeah, and we've seen that with the issues of the travel ban, and where it's his tweets are basically become, and we had Sean Spicer say that those tweets are official White House statements. So now they're part of a legal record.
Yeah, and you hear a lot of Republicans, particularly in Congress, saying, God, we wish he'd quit. It was great in the campaign, but it's time to be president now.
Well, do Republicans have reasons to be concerned about 2018?
Absolutely. President Trump's job approval ratings are in the 30%. I mean, all-time record lows for a president at this stage. It's a long way to 2018.
Right.
No predictions at this stage. But history teaches that the off year of a midterm election for a president, particularly in their first term, is a tough time for the party at the polls. And Republicans are just kind of stunned. They won these great victories, and now here they are. Their program is bogged down in Congress. There's congressional investigations and Justice Department investigations. So their agenda has been sidetracked, and Democrats are energized. I think the thing that Republicans have to worry about is many of the people who voted for Donald Trump are not happy, and so they won't vote for Democrats. They'll just stay home. And Democratic voters who were not energized about Hillary Clinton and the presidential campaign, they are energized, and they'll be getting out to vote, and that's what's got to cause heartburn for Republicans.
And I want to follow up on that. We're going to take a quick break. We're speaking with Dave Yepsen. He's the host of Iowa Press. David's the former director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by David Yepsen, host of the venerable Iowa Press on Iowa Public Television, former director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University. And David, before the break, we were talking about the energy factor of the electorate. And you mentioned about how Democrats that may not have been energized by the Clinton candidacy are now showing a renewed energy. And you're seeing, you know, across the country, districts, congressional districts held by Republicans, districts in many cases that Clinton did very well in, and even in districts that aren't, where you're seeing Democratic candidates and kind of a populist kind of movement. But I want to move back to Republicans. And, you know, you have the fact that you had a Republican House and Senate. Now, granted, you know, President Obama was there as a check on them. But nevertheless, you already had seen during that period some concern among the Tea Party Republicans, kind of the core Republicans. Now you have Republicans have it all in Washington, and still nothing that shows any progress towards the agenda that many of them campaigned on.
Well, they thought they had, you know, they'd won the trifecta, so to speak,
right.
And it's time to start moving on our agenda. And all of a sudden, they're bogged down. First of all, I think it's important to remember a lot of those new Republicans in Congress have never been in the majority, and so they're new to governing, and I think that's caused them some problems. The other thing that's going on our politics, and I think it's something that's happening in Springfield, there is such passion in both parties. You know, you can see the intensity of the debate, the anger, the Bernie Sanders voters, the Trump voters. That it makes it very difficult for compromise to occur. If you're a Democrat in Illinois, you have a hard time compromising on some of your core principles about things like workers' compensation or something, because you've got a political base out there that'll eat you alive and primary you if you do. And on the Republican side, voting for tax increases is very difficult. You're going to alienate Tea Party voters, Tea Party Republicans, and you're going to get primaried. I mean, I do give Governor Rauner credit for putting a tax increase on the table, because that causes him a lot of problems with his base, and so he's got to be intransigent and try to get something from the Democrats in the legislature to cool off that base. Those the activists in both parties are making it very difficult for political leaders to come to the middle. And Rick, last week we saw it in Ed Gillespie's narrow victory in the Virginia Republican primary contest. He was supposed to win big, and you know he had some a real competition from the Tea Party Republicans. So I think that's something to keep in mind, that the activists in our parties don't give the people who are trying to govern much room to move right now.
Well, is this kind of a sign that establishment politicians of all parties are on the outs because of this, you know, polarizing trend of where the activists are?
Oh, sure. I mean, what other occupation do you have where people run for office saying they don't know, they don't like government, they don't like the business, they don't have any experience in it, so elect me to office? I mean, the being in an establishment is very difficult because a lot of, you know, moderate voters, they don't eat and breathe this stuff. They don't participate in party activities. And so you have true believers, zealots, passionate people on both sides who tend to drive the agenda in both parties. Makes it very difficult.
Well, is compromise a lost cause?
I think
because of the winner-take-all politics that we live in?
That's part of it. Since there's no middle ground, it's fueled by the internet technology. That's relatively new in our politics. Twitter. A political leader can't move very quietly and try to do things without being slimed and slammed
trolled,
you know, on the internet. So it's a combination of all these things that are coming together that are making it very difficult, both in Washington and I think in Springfield.
Well,
and then
you heap on top of it the lack of civility.
Exactly, and that's just generally a problem in our society. And you know, this one of the things, and it's sort of tied to this, the violence that we saw in Washington. You know, when the political dialogue is so inflamed as it is now, and you sort of give license to people who have mental problems, who are on the fringe, who have issues, that it's okay to act outside the norm. And so,
well,
because the norm is
shifting.
Yeah.
I mean,
and we've had intense times in our politics before, but it's not quite. This is something new, thanks to the communications technologies of the era that we live in.
And of course, you have politicians that recognize the power of that social media that then kind of
feed
into that.
Throw gas on the fire. And then they complain about why they can't get anything done. So I think. And then they complain when people get passionate about it and you see some deranged people start doing crazy things in our politics. I mean, look at the campaign, Rick, where you had it was permissible to knock reporters around and spit on journalists covering the campaign. It was just the shoving matches that would occur in some of these.
That cut I played from Mark Sanford on Morning Joe, where people in a senior center are, you know, hurling around invectives.
So we got to find a way collectively as a society to dial it down a little bit, and I think that's going to be difficult to do.
Yeah, I don't know how, because if anything, it just keeps going the other way.
Right.
What can rein that in after it's out?
And those of us in the media have some responsibility, because not just the news media, but I think general media, you get ratings, clicks, eyeballs. You get rewarded cover, you know, by being outrageous. So a politician doesn't get a reward for saying temperate things or moderate things or reaching a compromise. It's conflict that makes news. It's the hot rhetoric and soundbite. And so I think everybody in our culture bears some responsibility for this. We got to find a way to dial it back. But a lot of people that have been left out of the American dream, we've got to find a way to bring them back into it too.
So maybe it's fitting when I see that there's talk that Jerry Springer's looking at running for governor of Ohio.
Isn't that something?
Because that just brings everything full cycle.
Yeah. Well, he was a political figure at one time, but then he opted to go into the
lowest common denominator media.
Right.
And what can I say? David Yepsen, host of Iowa Press on Iowa Public Television, former director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute, former national political reporter and columnist for the Des Moines Register. David, as always, a pleasure to have you here in the city of Chicago, and a pleasure to have you on the show.
Great to be with you. Great to be in this town. Thanks.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to Illinois Senate President John Cullerton, Democrat from Chicago. We'll be talking about the issues involving the special session that Republican Governor Bruce Rauner has called for starting on Wednesday, and the fact that this comes after Republicans in the House and Senate filed legislation that they say is a compromise, even though it follows what Senate Democrats had already done, was to advance their package over to the Illinois House. So we'll be getting his thoughts on that, as well as how, if any, the new advertising blitz by Republican Governor Rauner fits into the calculus for how this special session may go.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. Last week saw President Trump convening his cabinet, an event made somewhat unusual since it included going around this lengthy table where cabinet members and staff heaped praise on the president. Here, for example, is Chief of Staff Reince Priebus, followed by the director of the CIA, Mike Pompeo.
On behalf of the entire senior staff around you, Mr. President, we thank you for the opportunity and the blessing that you've given us to serve your agenda and the American people, and we're continuing to work very hard every day to accomplish those goals.
Mr. President, it's an honor to serve as your CIA director. It's an incredible privilege to lead the men and women who are providing intelligence so that we can do the national security mission. And in the finest tradition of the CIA, I'm not going to say a damn thing in front of the media.
Now, Trump's cabinet performance prompted Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer of New York to kind of troll Trump.
I want to thank everybody for coming. I just thought we'd go around the room. Lucy, how'd we do on the Sunday show yesterday?
Your tone was perfect. You were right on message.
Michelle, how'd my hair look coming out of the gym this morning?
You have great hair. Nobody has better hair than you.
Before we go any further, I just want to say thank you for the opportunity and blessing to serve your agenda.
That's great.
That's Chuck Schumer and staff. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Senate Democratic President John Cullerton of Chicago. Mr. President, thank you so much for joining me here.
Good morning. Happy to be here on Father's Day.
And a happy Father's Day to you. It's been quite a week this past week. We had the governor call the legislature back into special session starting for Wednesday. We have, you have been making the rounds to point out that Senate Democrats, using the governor's own introduced budget numbers, have passed a state budget, including revenue and ancillary issues. You had the Republicans in the House and Senate say that they've introduced legislation in an effort to try to restart things. And then you have the governor in an extensive TV advertising campaign bashing Speaker Madigan, his favorite target, and then pointing out that he was elected to reform Illinois. Given all of that, legislature goes back in Wednesday. What happens?
Well, Rick, thanks for having me on. I just want to let people know what we've been doing in the Illinois Senate. We started last December. We came out of a meeting, an unsuccessful meeting. The last time the governor called a meeting of the five leaders, Senator Redonia, my Republican counterpart, said, this isn't working. Let's work together in the Senate. We worked all December. We introduced bills on January 11th, about 12 bills, I think. A total compromise, a balanced revenue towards a balanced budget, compromises on the reforms that the governor wanted. We worked together for about a month, about ready to call them, pass some of them. Then the governor intervened, hijacked the process, told the Republicans to vote no because she didn't do as good a job as he thought he could have in negotiating, even though all we were trying to do was just see if we could get something passed out of the Senate, move it over to the House. And then he basically took off in the month of May, no meetings with the legislators. And as a result, as we got towards the end, we started working with the Republicans again on an actual budget, that is a spending plan. Got a lot of good ideas, worked with the Republicans the entire session. So we already had our kind of special session this year with bipartisanship. And then we got to the end where, you know, we're just trying to pass the bill over to the House. So we actually passed a budget, a balanced budget. And we did it through using the Republicans' ideas. And we took the governor's exact number. It's really important to know this. On February 15th, he introduced the budget spending $37,316,000,000. So the budget we passed spends $37,316,000,000. And they said, you know, we can't have the Pat Quinn's 5% tax rate. We have to be lower than that. So what's your number? 4.95. That's as high as we can go. Not 4.99, 4.95. So we took their 4.95 revenue. We took their spending number, and we cut about $2.5 to $3 billion to get to that balanced budget, and we passed it. That's not a press release. That's an actual vote. It's over in the House. It's a Senate bill, which means it can be amended. So we did that. While we were working on that budget, he apparently was working on campaign commercials. So for the third year in a row, in May, instead of working on a budget, he's doing commercials seriously so that he can say that we failed to pass him a budget. That he hijacked. His own budget, by the way, he can't say he's for tax increases. His own budget had a line of $4.6 billion hole working together with Senate on grand bargain. That's his euphemism for a tax increase, which, by the way, is not even a tax increase since Quinn's tax rate was 5%. It's a partial reinstatement to 4.95. But that's why it's so incredibly frustrating for him to then call a special session when he should have been working with us in May.
Well, let's look at his actions, including this ad. Do you think he really wants a budget agreement?
Well, if this is the irony. He's running for re-election, and I can't imagine a guy running for re-election when the accumulated debt on election day is $24 billion or more. I mean, it's been a disaster for 2.5 years. What do you say after 4 years of accomplishing nothing? The irony is that if we're trying to get him to agree to a balanced budget with his reforms, and we're checking off the boxes on all the things that he asked for, we in the Senate have been trying to accommodate him, by the way, with not 100% support from our own supporters. As Mr. Jepson talked about, the unions and the trial lawyers are interest groups that help fund the Democratic Party. They're not in favor of some of these things that we propose, but they're compromises. So the irony is he would actually be better off politically if he do it, and certainly the state would.
Well, I mean, the reason I ask is because, and even in some of the campaign fundraising material it from the governor, it says, you know, I blocked a tax increase.
Which he proposed indirectly in February.
Well, that's why I mean.
Which everybody knows has to happen. We met with Republicans. A couple of Republicans even proposed a no tax increase budget. I met three times with him, went through him, got a lot of good ideas from him about where we can cut, but even they admitted that it's impossible to do this without a reinstatement, a partial reinstatement of where the tax was before.
Well, now, in addition to that, you have also some forms of service taxes as a revenue generator in this.
That's true, not a lot, but it's
I mean, certainly not that, from
yeah,
what
most states don't tax services more than we do. We found a lot of savings and a lot of revenue that came from procurement reform and selling the Thompson Center and some group health savings, assuming that he gets a contract with ASME.
Well, I was going to ask, how do you calculate savings in group? And I know his budget calculated.
We'll tell you exactly what to do. It's very important. He picked a number. We used his number. He said, we're going to save $435 million in our group health savings. ASME said, well, we don't think it'll be that much, but if that's how much you want to appropriate, because right now it costs $1.8 billion, group health. Right now we're appropriating zero.
Zero, right.
So rightfully so, the union said, you know what, if you're going to appropriate $1.8 billion minus $435, then when we get a contract, we're going to have to appropriate whatever the actual number is, okay? And that's what you do in a budget. You predict how much money you're going to come in, you predict how much savings you're going to have, and you make adjustments during the course of the year.
So you, in meeting with you this past week, and you somewhat raised the question of what does Governor Rauner want us, as in the Senate, to do?
There's nothing for us. He listed 9 or 10 things that we're supposed to do in the special session. We passed them already, every one of them. They're over in the House or they're on his desk. So I just don't exactly know what it is that he wants us to do. And the Republicans say they've introduced a new budget. Now, we've already passed the one that he introduced. Why they're introducing a new spending plan, I don't know. But they forgot to introduce the money. They don't have a bill to pay for it. They say they're for it, but they actually couldn't find anybody to sponsor it. So we're not going to call a budget that spends money that's not balanced. That's why this discussion about a stopgap, it doesn't mean anything. You can't just it doesn't do any good to authorize spending of money without the money. The Tribune article by Kim Geiger recently pointed out the schools are saying, we're not getting, you've authorized us to spend money for us this year, but you're not sending us the money. So that's not working. And by the way, it's not so difficult. We did it. We worked with the Republicans to put together a budget. We're not saying it has to be exactly ours, but it's pretty good idea to start with the governor's proposed budget, the tax rate that they said they could live with, and that's what we've already passed. It's over in the House, and I think it's time for the House to consider doing what we've done. Think about the fact that Senator Rodonio came to me. We worked with not just her, but all of her caucus. That didn't happen in the House. Now would be a good time for the Speaker, who I think is very open to this. He knows that you need Republican votes.
He has to have Republican votes
because they don't
at this
have a three-fifths vote like we do in the Senate. Durkin and Madigan should do what Rodonio and Cullerton did. Sit down, see if they can come up with a plan. And you know what? We might be at a point where we need kind of a compromise between Durkin, Madigan, Rodonio, and myself, and we can pass this. And by definition, anything you pass is veto-proof. So it might be time for an intervention.
To circumvent the governor.
Well, circumvent him. I mean, he hasn't actually proposed any kind of a compromise that he'll agree to. The famous, now I got to say, it's just so amazing that he actually said this. We worked to fund and fix the worst funding formula in the nation for school funding. And he puts together a commission. They make recommendations. They couldn't actually draft a bill, so we did it for him. We compromised. And actually, it's 100% of what he wants. But there's some relief, fair relief for Chicago. And in an effort to kind of get leverage on Rahm Emanuel, I assume, he says, well, it's 90% of what I want. So who gets more than 90% of what they want in a negotiations on a controversial negotiations. Everybody knows that that just sounded absurd. So it's just that he's just being so unreasonable, and it's been 2.5 years, and his appetite for collateral damage to this state is unbelievable. Here's something that people really should think about. When we go for these 2.5 years without a budget, we're not saving money. We're spending $7.5 billion more than we have coming in. So that means now we're up to $15 billion. In order to make up for that $15 billion that we owe, guess what? We have to have a higher tax rate even than the 4.95 to pay it off. So stopping the bleeding is another reason why the House Republicans, Jim Durkin, and I don't know how many, at least five of them, or maybe as many as 10, 11, they have to step up. And as Mr. Jepson said, I understand how tough it is. They have real rich people with money to send against them in primaries. And if you like your job and you want to keep it, and you think you're doing a good job, and you don't want to lose it because you don't have $70 million to spend against somebody, it's tough. But that's really what we're coming down to now.
We're speaking to Illinois Senate President John Cullerton. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by Illinois Senate President John Cullerton. And again, a happy Father's Day Sunday to all of you out there. Mr. President, when you look at the actions of the governor, I mean, even some of Speaker Madigan's people have said, well, throwing up these ads now, that how does that show an intent to try to reach compromise?
It's like if you and your wife are trying to make some major decision in your life about where to send the kids to school or something like that, and you're sitting down to negotiate, you don't really want to start off by saying, you know, before we start, I just want to let you know that I always really hated your mother. You know, it's not the way to start. You, in fact, even now, you know, I mean, when talking about the governor, I want to eventually next week sit down and do a deal with this guy. So as frustrating as it is, you have to hold back perhaps your personal thoughts about his inexperience and the like and just say, okay, listen, governor, here's what you said you needed. You need term limits. So we passed term limits for leaders. You want pension reform. We passed it with 15 Democrats and 16 Republicans. You wanted money for procurement reform. You wanted to make it easier to consolidate local government. We passed all that. We passed a school funding reform bill to finally fix that. We passed a revenue increase that you said, in effect, we had to do. We passed your budget at your number. You say you want a property tax freeze. We don't think that's a good idea when you have really poor school districts. We already have a property tax cap. You want to freeze them. They get no new money. How are they going to pay for they have kids that are going to school in closets and 4 days of classes and no music teachers, no art teachers, in some, especially southern Illinois. You want to freeze their property taxes? I tell you what, we'll give it to you. 2 years. 2 years ago, Senator Redonio, at the governor's insistence, put a two-year property tax freeze bill in. And guess what? We passed it. You'd think he'd be celebrating. No, now it's got to be 4 years. I mean, it's just crazy because we're responding to what he wants. And it's now in this overtime. And we're not going to – the Senate Democrats already voted for a balanced budget. There's no reason for us to vote for an unbalanced budget. And that isn't going to happen.
So here we have a special session. Obviously, we mentioned that there are these Republican bills that got filed. I mean, is there going to be discussion about those? Do you believe there ought to be discussion about those?
They put a new spending proposal in.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to call it until they put a budget in. That is a revenue bill.
Mm-hmm.
If they introduce a revenue bill, we will have a debate on it. But the point is that people should understand we've already had these discussions with the budget that they've just reintroduced. That's where we got the savings. That's how we were able to put together the budget that we passed that's identical to the governor's revenue. You know, the House wasn't working on this budget like we were. We had the benefit of working with Republicans. The House members might want to spend more money, which would mean, you know, more revenue.
Or more cuts somewhere
else.
And
they know they need Republicans to vote for it. So I'm not saying that they have to vote on our bill exactly the way we passed it, but it would be a really good place to start. And so, and as far as the reforms are concerned, we've already passed those reforms, especially, you know, in the
Senate. Not in the way that the governor
has
wants
changed
them.
His mind to now require more changes, but we've checked off all his boxes. And in the meantime, the collateral damage to the state is unbelievable. It's just across the board. And as I point out, it's costing us, you know, $11, $12, $15 million a day by not passing a budget.
Well, and since I've never been referred to as Mr. Sunshine when it comes to issues involving Springfield, I'm not sure that I see any real light at the end of this tunnel and wonder about things like a pressure point such as schools opening or something to be a motivating factor.
Look what happened in Kansas. It's really interesting what happened in Kansas last Tuesday. Governor Brownback, Republican governor, now very unpopular in Kansas, just like Governor Rauner is very unpopular in Illinois. The Republicans from Kansas, pretty conservative, two-thirds vote to override them to raise the income tax. They finally got to the point where they said, this ain't working here, pal. And that's what we need. We need an intervention. We need some Republicans in the Senate. We'll get them. We've been working with Republicans. But the House is really key. Jim Durkin is a key guy here. And, you know, I understand that it's, you know, from his point of view, tough working with the Speaker. They fight each other over elections every November. He wants to probably be the Speaker someday. I know that the governor paid for 98% of his campaigns last year, and he's got $70 million. I know that's a really big influence. But if those guys over there realize that they're going down with the ship when this governor loses next year, and that they probably should just, you know, pull away, do a deal with the Speaker and us and Senator O'Donnell and I think that's probably the best, most likely, most optimistic way of looking at what could happen down there.
So, again, to look out for their own selves, even though, but what makes the Republicans, with their allegiance and the money issue with Governor Rauner, any difference than some of the Democrats and their allegiance to you or the Speaker?
Well, first of all, the money is unbelievable. I mean, we don't have the access to all that money.
I'm not saying you're individually writing that check,
yeah.
But
you know, I don't mean to be naive here, but there's a lot of people get elected, like most people down there get elected to do the right thing. They have a sense. They have to come from different parts of the state. They have different philosophies, but everybody knows how bad this is. You know, the worst things that are said about the governor have been told to me by the Republicans.
Who?
Privately. So I'm not going to, unlike Governor Rauner, I'm not going to disclose private conversations, but they're not happy, okay? This guy is, you know, the guy with the money, no experience, difficult to deal with, doesn't know a compromise, doesn't know a win when he sees it, thinks that 90% of something is not enough to compromise on. And so they just want to do the right thing, and it's going to have to. They're going to have to step up. We've seen it in the Senate. I'm sure that there's similar folks over in the House that are willing to do it.
That's Illinois Senate President John Cullerton, Democrat from Chicago. Mr. President, as always, nice to have you here in studio, and I hope you'll come back and visit again.
Great, thank you very much.
We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Democratic State Representative Jay Hoffman from Swansea, David Yepsen, the host of Iowa Press, and Illinois Senate President John Cullerton. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening out there, and hope you all, fathers who celebrate, have a great Father's Day. And now it's time for the great Dean Richards.
You're bringing in the big guns today.
Well, you know, there's a lot going on.
President Cullerton here today.
Yes,
wow.
Yes.
That's a big deal.
In person.
In person, studio.
Well, he said it was a good way to get him back to, you know, get the day started on a good note.
That, ladies and gentlemen, shows you the influence of a Rick Pearson.
I don't know about that.
Any of my guests.
That might be just...
Maybe we'll talk to you on the phone if we're not too tired. A Rick Pearson gets one of the most powerful people in the state of Illinois. Comes in studio on a Sunday morning.
On a Father's Day.
On a Father's Day Sunday morning. Wow.
Well, there's big issues to be dealt with here.
Yeah, that's right.
And we deal with them here.
Bigger than a big screen showing of La La Land at Ravinia today that I have free tickets for?
I heard about that.
You be the judge.